This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 239, where today CJ and I are going to catch up on some conference updates and a bunch of mishmash of cloud news, recorded live February the 13th, 2018.
A 99.9% SLA means you're protected from power outages, bad patches, natural disasters, and maybe even a dinosaur attack. Does it protect you from yourself, though? AvePoint Backup for SharePoint Online provides full fidelity backup and recovery from individual items to entire team sites. AvePoint can run backups up to 4 times a day to ensure your data is secure. Recover anytime you want without having to pick up the phone and schedule restore windows. Learn why AvePoint is the Microsoft Cloud expert at www.avpoint.com.
Good morning, CJ. How are you doing?
Very well. How are you?
I'm doing good, man. I'm a bit frazzled. I'm jumping between presentations and stuff. I presented to the PMP group this morning. I'm doing a webinar this afternoon.
Yeah.
Doing a podcast today.
Oh my God, it's all on, dude.
Yeah. It's a recording day. It's definitely a recording day here, but it's all good, man. We did opened up an affiliate program for Voitanos this week.
Ooh, that's exciting.
Yeah, got a couple of affiliates that have already signed up and already had one of them has made a couple sales already.
No joke.
It is very cool to see when I saw the people who are interested in it. So the way it works is that basically if you get a special link, you sign up, we approve it. And then once we approve it, you get a special link and you get basically 20 points on every sale.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah.
So you've got the idea here is you've got a group of folks that can help sort of spread the word about the course, know it intimately, right? And can talk to their customers about what it offers and things. Mm-hmm. And then they get some goodies as part of the deal if they go sell it for you.
Yeah, exactly. If you go to like the Collab 365 website, you go there, they have a new training section and my stuff is listed in there. And so if you happen to sign up as an affiliate, so that's all normal training stuff. That's one thing. But then on the affiliate side, yeah, if you sign up as an affiliate and you go sell my course, whatever the sale price was or what the customer paid, then you will get 20% of that sale. I know what it is, but we pay it at regular intervals where we'll go through and we'll pay it. Basically, you're a 20% commission salesperson for us.
Yeah, gotcha. So you can help get a little bit of extra marketing out there and a little bit of assistance and getting out into people's hands. Nice. That's a great idea.
Yeah. It's something I wanted to do for a little bit. I've been waiting. I wanted to wait and do it for a few months once we got our sea legs under us. And it was really cool. Really cool to see it go so well out of the box.
Awesome.
A couple sales came in. I'm like, where did that come from? I'm like, oh, I got to pay commission on that. But that's great.
Yeah. That's a great way of spreading the word for sure.
Yeah. How about you?
Oh man. I learned the hard lesson about regional settings yesterday.
Uh-oh.
So yeah, any software developer will laugh their head off when they hear this, right? But
and you're talking about regional, not Reginald, right? You didn't have some guy that you were hooking up with.
Reginald Settings, yes. He's a very good friend of mine. Anyway, he came around and whopped my ass yesterday. So what happened was, this is total noob dev stuff, right? But absolutely classic and hilarious. So I'll just make fun of myself in the process.
So what you're saying is that this really should be being told by Jeremy Thake.
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
See if he listens to the show on that one.
Yeah, exactly. So we have a customer who reported an issue with our on-premises agent. And long story short, it turns out there is a piece of code that we depend on from our on-premises library to do a bit of work. I won't go into the details of what it does, but needless to say, it's pretty mundane and rudimentary. Anyway, so we call that piece of code to get this job done. And as part of that, we send some information into it and it's a number, right? And we say, go do this thing with this number. And then it comes back. Anyway, so getting to the point, it wasn't doing its job. And we're like, what the hell is going on here? And so we get the logs and we look into it a little bit more and things like that. And it turns out that this particular dependent library that we use wasn't handling numbers sent to it in string format when those numbers were delimited by a comma instead of a decimal point, like a period, between the big numbers and the fractions of numbers, right? So the, 24.432, right?
Mm-hmm.
Turns out this particular customer was in South Africa and they use a comma, much like a lot of Europe and things. Mm-hmm. And they had their server set to regional settings that enforce this comma and string representations of numbers. So it's this unfortunate set of circumstances where this dependent library wasn't handling internationalization or regionalization of numbers properly in scenarios where servers were set to different regional settings. Mm. So it wasn't particularly our code per se, except we obviously hadn't tested for that. It was a culmination of an unfortunate series of events, also including servers set to different regional settings, which for those listening, please don't do that. And don't change your clocks either on servers. Server clocks should always be UTC.
Yeah.
In fact, Microsoft, if you're listening, please remove the ability to change time zones on servers and regional settings. It would save the world of software developers all sorts of pain and suffering when code you depend on but is sort of a little bit not yours or out of your control doesn't handle those situations very well.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I felt pretty stupid when we found that. It was an easy fix, right? But yeah.
Ouch.
And kind of invisible, like, you know, hidden away in that library. So kind of pain. But it made me wonder, like, how many dependent libraries, you know, with NPM and NuGet and all these things that you rely on these days to build your apps now have problems like that in it. Thousands and thousands and thousands, I suspect.
When you've got so many these external libraries that you're using, and so many of them these days are done by multiple people. So, I mean, like, you know, before the time when you're doing like package software, your company generally used everything yourself. You built everything yourself, or you bought something from two or three different vendors of different libraries that you use stuff from, or a few different vendors. But now, in this open source world, you see projects that have a greater cross-section coming from different sources. Not so much one project's got a bunch of developers on it, but it's just, I've got, you know, I can do a very simple project. Next thing I know, my SharePoint framework solution that I build is, if I had to put a, say, like, let's put the different buckets for each source of where these libraries are coming from that I'm using. Next thing I know, I've got 15 buckets just to show yet another stock ticker.
Oh yeah, that's horrifying.
And it has nothing to do with, I mean, to be clear, no, before people start jumping on my case about this, this is not an NPM thing. This is not a Node thing. This is not a JavaScript thing. This is
no, the way not that
we
at all.
Today. It's how we use so many open source-based packages these days from different...
And you just do it blindly as well, which is pretty scary. Anyway, bottom line with this dang library was, shame on me for like passing it a string that it couldn't understand without testing that. But also, shame on it for taking a decimal as a string. Like, if it had just taken the thing as a... Sorry, it was a double. If it had just taken this number as a double like it should have, and not taken it as a string, none of this would have occurred. But anyway, I blame myself for not testing it, but also this library for being stupid. There you go.
Awesome.
Oh, and for all developers out there, switch your dev box to somewhere in Europe and change your time zone to not UTC.
See what that does to you.
Yeah. Test your code with different regional settings applied and different time zones and leave it like that while you develop. Because then you'll very quickly realize when you're sticking dates and times in a database and not in UTC, things go wonky real quick. And so if you've got your own dev box set to a weird time zone, you'll know pretty fast where your code's going wrong.
Oh, fun.
And same with, you know, string formatting and stuff like that. Anyway, listen to Dave. Noob lesson from me. There you go.
Yeah, there you go. Hey, the last update I'll give you too. I wrapped up something. This is more on a personal note. I wrapped up something that I set out to do about 7 months ago and wrapped it up this past weekend. And that was run a half marathon, one half marathon a month for 4 months.
Woohoo!
So
yeah, I saw that your news about completing one this weekend.
Yeah, it was this one was it's called the 26.2 Donna National Marathon to finish breast cancer. So it's they team up with the Mayo Clinic. It's a huge huge marathon, and I do the half marathon. I'm only half crazy. But the cool thing about this organization is that of all the money that they raise, all the money they raise from this event, 100% of it goes to care and prevention, not only for people that are dealing with breast cancer, but also for families and stuff that have to like travel for treatment and all that kind of stuff and housing and everything. So it's not like some charities where so much of the money is like stuck in like, I don't know, operations or stuff like that. Anyway, it was a big deal to me. And there was a fourth one that I did. Unfortunately, it was a lot warmer than all the other training and stuff that I've been doing for many months. I say warmer, I mean, it started in the 60s. The temperature started in the 60s and it got to a low 70s by the time I finished, but it still was, it was warm. And I thought I had a sub 2 hour feel in me the way the day started, but about mile 4 or 5, I was like, I don't think this is going to happen today. Mile 8, cramps started hitting me in my legs. I finished, but I was about, was about 9 minutes off where I wanted to be. I finished 1 second. I said, at least don't go over 208. I hit
207.59. There you go.
Good I didn't result. Mean to either. I was just like, I want to stand at 208. And I finished my clock time, or my watch said it was 208 and change, but the official time said 2 hours, 7 minutes, 59 seconds.
Oh, man.
So.
Hey, well, congrats on finishing.
It's all done now, man. I'm going to rest my ankles. My ankles are killing me.
Yeah. You've got old man ankles now. Yeah.
Right now, yeah.
Oh, man. I went skiing on the weekend. And I'm feeling it too. I can hardly walk straight. But yeah.
Yeah, that's me right now.
Hey, should we get on some news?
We should.
Are you being asked repeatedly to integrate different business systems in ever narrower timeframes with increasing process complexity? What if you could standardize the way you build these business processes so your team are focused on higher value tasks versus the nuts and bolts of running the processes and integrations? Nintex can make that happen. With the Nintex platform, work flows from person to person, system to system, to the cloud and back. Got a custom system you want to connect with? No code extensions let you plug into systems simply and easily using REST and Swagger. With Nintex, work just flows, so your teams can work smarter, work faster, and be more connected than ever. Try it out for free for 30 days at www.nintex.com/trynwc. While many IT teams struggle with the impact of deploying Office 365, Zscaler customers are experiencing 40% or greater network performance across file download times, as well as TCP and DNS connection times, compared to using next-gen firewalls and UTMs to route Office 365 traffic locally to the internet. While you may know Zscaler as the leader in cloud security, they also have hundreds of customers who are processing over 1.2 petabytes of Office 365 traffic monthly through the Zscaler cloud. Visit www.zscaler.com to learn more.
All right, CJ, we got some a little bit of updates, podcast news that we do want to share here. Definitely for a couple conferences that are coming up. We are going to be participating. Definitely, we are participating in two conferences. The other one, can't confirm it just yet. Mm. But at the beginning of March, March 2nd and 3rd, the North American Collaboration Summit. This is put on by Mark Rackley and crew out of Branson, Missouri. You and I are going to be there. We're going to be the keynote speakers for the day two for keynote number two. And we were doing the plan is we're definitely recording a show as the keynote, but we are planning on doing it or hoping to do it as a live show, streaming it on Facebook Live. So
yeah,
if anybody's interested, tune into that. We will definitely send information out about that to our mailing list. You got any questions you want us to read on the air? It would be absolutely awesome for you to submit those to us. We can have some fun with everyone, people who are going to be there live at the show. Looking forward to having you. And answering your questions and covering some stuff. And another thing too is if you're interested in joining us as well, Mark's running a great deal right now where the conference is 50% off if you use different discount codes from the speakers. So either use Johnson or use Connell as your speaker code and get 50% off the cost of the registration. The show's only $65 if you don't have a code. But I mean, you know, that's another $30 that you can spend in the bar at night.
Yeah, there you go. Buy us a drink. Hey, I like where you're going. Great show. And with a really good lineup of folks going in terms of the talent for speakers and so forth. So, and I'm not talking about us. I'm talking about everybody else. You're running a workshop there too on SharePoint Framework, which people are looking to get into it. It's a great way to get started, right? So definitely look at something like that if you're interested.
Absolutely. We got another show.
Yeah.
I'll let you do this.
Well, I was just going to say the next one that we're working towards is the SharePoint Conference North America, which is a bigger show and coming up in May, correct? Have I got those dates right?
That's correct.
Coming up in May. And so this is the show that Microsoft are backing big time and putting together in Vegas. And it's shaping up pretty well, actually. There's, a great lineup of speakers going. Microsoft will be showing up in a big way for this one. They're actually combining their May event that the SharePoint team have been doing fairly regularly for the last couple of years, I think. Mm-hmm. They've been doing May events. They've actually done it pretty well in May's past, May's gone by, mm-hmm. where they've talked about, hey, here are the things we said we were going to do and that we've delivered on, and here's where we're going next, right? And so they kind of give you a glimpse into the roadmap over the next 6 to 12 months of where they're heading. So they're doing that in person. In the past, it's been a virtual event. Some people have been there in person, but small audience. And so they've combined the two, and they're actually doing it at the conference. And so it promises to be a great mixture of practical stuff that you can do today, plus what's coming next from Microsoft. And so Jeff Tepper will be there keynoting and all that sort of stuff. And so we're going to show up. And what we're trying to arrange, and none of this is really locked in stone just yet, but there'll be some podcasters there. We're hoping to have a podcasting broadcast center, for want of a better word, on the expo floor. And we should hopefully be podcasting each day from that location. And so we're aiming to cover news and events from the keynote and obviously announcements that happen there. Then each day, sort of more news and events and covering some of the topics that have been spoken about, and have a great set of guests on the show each day as well.
You say it's not set in stone. It looks pretty good that we'll have a show.
Never say never. Something might happen, but at this stage, things are looking pretty good.
Yeah, so things are looking pretty good. We're going to have good interviews, working on some plans for that show as well. So if you're, hopefully you'll be able to join us live, and if not, then we will ideally be publishing or broadcasting again live to Facebook Live when we're doing this. You want to just find us on the Microsoft Cloud Show on Facebook. Like our page, you'll get the updates for when those come out that way, or sign up to our mailing list. Just go to our website, microsoftcloudshow.com. You get info that way as well.
Also, you get if you want discounts off that show as well, you can use discount code Connell, I think, is your discount code. Mine's Johnson. Same sort of setup. And I think you get $50 off a ticket or something along those lines.
Yeah. They get a discount. Actually, we get a discount too.
Oh, yeah. We do too. Yeah.
Yeah.
So there you go. Yeah. It's nice.
Put it to you this way. If you use the discount code Connell or Johnson, not only can you buy us a beer, but we will buy you one back.
It's like beer inception. It's like free energy.
It is. Free beer tomorrow. Exactly. It's like the sun.
It's like perpetual motion.
There you go. And then we got one more conference coming up here. We don't know what our involvement's going to be like in this, but it got announced this past week, and it's always a big deal.
For devs, Microsoft Build. It's kind of been announced pretty late, actually. For a show of this size, registration opens February 15th.
After we publish that, or before we publish the show.
Yeah, get on that real quick, because it's probably already sold out. Sorry about that. But the show is May 7th through 9th in Seattle. So this is Microsoft's big developer show. It's always a pretty decent event, actually. It's great when it's in Seattle because it's closer to Microsoft. You get more Microsoft speakers, more access to corp folks that come along and talk about what they've been working on and things. I don't know how big it will be this year. It seems to vary in size a lot, and it sells out super fast usually. Mm. So if you are a Microsoft developer and you're looking, there's going to be news about Docker and Kubernetes and built lots of stuff on Azure and lots of stuff about building apps for, I suspect, for building apps for Windows and things, but mostly I suspect for Azure. Mm. It's definitely the dev event of the year for Microsoft. And I do suggest if you want to go to this, you've got to be on it the day it opens, like the minute it opens. So unfortunately, this news is coming out a little late. But good luck. And I hope you get a ticket.
Yeah. Well, and of course, I mean, in our defense too, we record about a week in advance before we went to publishing our shows. And
this kind of just came out. Yeah,
this just came out. So we will definitely be covering it though. If you can't attend, we will definitely be covering it either from afar or in person.
I hope to be there in person, honestly. I know it's sort of debatable whether you'd be able to make it in person, but we'll definitely do shows from there if I get there, or if we get there. And if not, we'll cover the news regardless. So.
Yeah, awesome. Sounds good. How about we jump into some cloudy news?
Yeah, let's do it. What do you got?
All right, so we're all over the board here in terms of different sources on where we'll find the cloud news. First one that I've got here is actually switching over to the Google Cloud platform. They have a beta offering that is now available to us, which are called the Cloud TPUs. What the TPUs are, if you remember, these are TensorFlow processing units. These are special cards that NVIDIA built for Google that are dedicated, really built for the TensorFlow platform for doing machine learning stuff. Each TPU packs up to 180 teraflops of floating point performance and 64 gigs of high bandwidth memory onto a single board. And what they're doing here is they're standing up a cloud offering where you'll be able to take advantage of this hardware if you can apply and you can get into it, to be able to take advantage of some really high-end machine learning workloads that you're building. So cool beta offering that's available to us. We knew that this was coming when they announced it back at Google I.O. a while back. Kind of almost was, what, like about a year ago or so? Something like
that. Yeah, yeah.
But Google I.O., I know the next big Google conference is actually coming up pretty soon. I think it's the same
time. Week as Build.
Yeah, wow. Talk about a pissing match.
Yeah, no joke.
It's like, wait, so we have two big cloud vendors doing a pissing match the same week. One of them's in Seattle. The other one, they usually do, Google does theirs usually down in San Francisco.
I think so, yeah.
So two cloud providers in a pissing match. That's rain. Make it rain.
Pretty wet.
All right, sorry.
Yeah, there you go. Seattle, it rains in Seattle most of the time anyway.
There you go. Hey, these things aren't going to be cheap though, man. $6.50 an hour. $6.50 an hour.
Wow, that's pretty expensive. That's going to rack up pretty fast. You're going to want to turn those puppies off when they're not being used.
Exactly. They got a webinar coming up for it. There's a link to it in the blog post that we'll set up here, or that we'll put in the show notes here. Webinar is going to be on February the 27th, where you can learn more information about these with a link to where you can sign up and request the TPU quota and describe what your needs are. They will do your best to give you access to the TPUs as soon as they can.
Gotcha. Gotcha. I've got a really, it would have been a pick if I didn't have other picks, but if you are looking to getting into building distributed systems, if you're a developer that's really trying to wrap your head around how to build applications differently in a more distributed manner, microservice or mini-service based kind of architecture, and you're trying to wrap your head around a lot of the concepts and how to do it without s***ing it up. Mm. One of the godfathers of Kubernetes, Brendan Burns, who now works at Microsoft, has released a book. I believe it's by O'Reilly, but they're giving it away for download. And so the link is in the show notes. It's free. I've signed up and grabbed the book. It's a PDF they let you download, so you can stick it on a whatever reader you want or what have you. But it's a 160-page ebook, and I'll just go quickly through what you'll find in the book. An introduction to distributed system concepts, right? So getting the level set on what all the words mean and the kind of the concepts, so you're all on the same page. Reusable patterns and practices for building distributed systems, aka don't make the mistakes everybody else has. Exploration of a platform for integrating applications, data sources, business partners, clients, mobile apps, social networks, and the Internet of Things devices. Not quite sure what that means, but I suspect some examples.
Yeah.
Event-driven architectures for processing and reacting to events in real time. Kind of nice wee option for pattern in your application. And additional resources for learning about containers and container orchestration systems, aka how do you run your app once you've built it?
Yeah.
Like I said, I've started working my way through it. If you've got any sort of experience with this, there's some parts that are kind of a bit basic. So and it says at the book, hey, if you've got any experience with this, you can skip these sections and go straight to here. There's a bit of everything in there for everybody. But, you know, Brendan Burns knows his stuff, obviously, founded Kubernetes, understands distributed systems pretty well. And there's a lot of interesting stuff in there, actually. So definitely worth a look-see. And it's free. You can't beat that, right?
No, free.
Well, free price. It's free, but you have to give them your email address. So.
Oh, wow. Big deal.
Yeah.
Just an email address makes it easier.
Yeah, there you go.
Cool. That's a really good resource. I haven't gone through it yet, but I grabbed it as well. It's on my iPad and I have a flight coming up next week that I'll be able to take a look at.
Yeah, it's kind of nice. One thing I briefly touch on with it, got an old app, want to make it better. It's got options for you to sort of tackle that problem. How do you take a old piece of code and make it more friendly to deal with in an architecture like that? Mm-hmm. And they got some good advice around those sorts of things. So definitely worth a look.
Awesome. I got another bit of news here from TechCrunch that Microsoft has bought a gaming services startup called PlayFab to bolster its Azure platform. So we've seen a lot of work, a lot of people focus on doing using the cloud for game-based development, both for like the MMOs, massively multiplayer online games, as well as like you get things like Titanfall 2 does a lot of graphics processing, outsources it over to Azure. What these guys have done, we see people using different clouds for this. I've seen a lot of effort, a lot of emphasis on AWS and GCP. Azure's jumping into the game here as well. And they've bought this company called PlayFab, which was founded just a few years ago in 2014.
Yeah, I hate to break it to you, AC, but your memory is pretty bad. We covered this in episode 237.
Are you serious?
Yeah. So for those of you who missed it.
Oh, God. My bad.
Our regular listeners may be having a case of deja vu.
So to
in
say
fairness,
some time,
I think I spoke about it last time, but you did it better.
Oh, my bad.
No,
you're right. This news is from January the 29th. I totally messed up on this. My bad.
No worries. Right. I only just noticed that you had this in our list and didn't catch it before we started recording. So my
That's
bad
okay.
too.
That's okay. This concludes our new segment called the Wayback Machine Microsoft Cloud Show Edition.
Excellent.
Okay, I'll take my penance and I'll jump onto my next bit of news then.
Okay, sounds good.
This one I'll be careful about. Now, this is old news as well. Let me preface that, and I'm fully aware of it. A couple episodes ago, probably the same episode that I messed up last time, we talked about how Red Hat was buying CoreOS.
Yes, yep.
And what I want to point out an article on Forbes.com that was by Jason Bloomberg that talks a lot about why they did it. What's the real reason Red Hat's bought CoreOS? Mm. And it's a fairly long article. It's a little too hard to summarize it, but it really makes a lot of sense for a lot of Red Hat's larger customers, their big enterprise customers, and explains what the benefit is that they're getting out of this to make containers, to make Kubernetes very enterprise friendly. It's a good option. It shows that it's really positioning Red Hat in a good place to be a corporate offering behind an open source, a very popular open source container orchestrator.
Mm.
Does that make sense? I mean, you're essentially buying support for a very good platform. So
yeah, gotcha.
Goes into OpenShift, goes into a bunch of the other players that are in the space here. Really good article that explains it. Help me understand, like, why did they do this? And it does help. So
yeah, gotcha.
Point out that one.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to read that. I'd love to see some of the reasoning in that article for this. Cool. So it's earnings time, roughly. We're getting lots of news currently popping out about earnings and bits and bobs. There's a cool article up on Forbes by Bob Evans entitled, Why Microsoft is Ruling the Cloud, IBM is Matching Amazon, and Google is $15 billion behind. So this is actually kind of eye-opening, okay? So all the news is about how Amazon is like leaps and bounds ahead of everybody else, you know, 10 times as big as Azure or whatever, all of that sort of stuff. But what this article basically, the picture this article paints, which I found interesting, but you have to also take it with a little bit of a grain of salt, is that the cloud race is not just purely about Azure versus AWS,
mm-hmm.
right? The cloud is bigger than where do you host your stuff, right? And so they give a breakdown of 2017 cloud in quotes revenue, right? I put it in quotes because I don't fully grasp what products accrue to each of these vendors' numbers. But so there's a little bit of research to be done there. But going from the bottom of the list, Google at $3 billion estimated.
Mm-hmm.
They say estimated because they're not clear with their numbers and their earnings results and stuff like that. So it's, you know, they've tried to come up with a number based on what they do know. SAP, $4.71 billion.
Mm-hmm.
Oracle, $5.6 billion. Salesforce, $9.92 billion. That's an obvious one. IBM, $17 billion.
This was an eye-opener to me.
Amazon, $17.5 billion.
That was an eye-opener that was so close to IBM.
Right. And Microsoft, $18.6 billion.
Now, yeah.
I mean, that's a big number. But because we're more involved with Microsoft than any of these other vendors, right? We are the Microsoft Cloud Show after all.
Mm-hmm.
I can grok that one way more easily than all the others, mm-hmm. right? Amazon, I understand to a certain degree, you know, because we've got more visibility in what's going on with AWS there. IBM, I want to use a lot of expletives right now, but what the hell?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of fascinating. And they say, what do some of these numbers mean? IBM's a huge winner on multiple fronts, that its cloud business is only 3% smaller than Amazon's and within 10% of market leader of Microsoft. What else have they got? They're basically saying the narrative amongst the media and the rest of the press is wrong. All they're really focusing on is AWS versus Azure versus GCP. And really, the story about the cloud is far bigger than that. Actually, I kind of agree with that because hosting is pretty commodity. But when you get somebody using something like Office 365, with all of the tools and all the apps and all that sort of stuff, it makes it sticky, right? Yeah, and that means people will keep paying for it because they run their businesses on it and it's critical to their business. And that is much harder to switch off than moving your website from AWS to Azure or vice versa, for example.
You hit the nail on the head on a bunch of the things that I was going to say. And that was the thing that got me, was that I'm curious to find out where Amazon or what IBM's cloud revenue number comes from. That's not a slight to IBM. It's just that I don't think of IBM as a cloud company.
Hmm.
Salesforce, yes. But I mean, Salesforce is, they do one thing very, very well. They're the dominant player in it. And it's surprising that with that one thing that, you know, they're looking at nearly a $10 billion in revenue for 2017. the thing that really stuck out to me, though, I mean, that you see a big difference here between Microsoft and Amazon. And, you know, like you also alluded to a minute ago, it would be nice to be able to slice and dice these numbers and to see what kind of added...
In an apples to apples kind of way, wouldn't it be nice?
Yeah, it would. I mean, I want to see Amazon and their hosting business and AWS, and I want to compare that to Azure, not Office 365. That's different, right? I suspect, I don't know this, but I suspect the majority of Microsoft's cloud revenue is coming from Office 365. The majority of Amazon's cloud business is coming from AWS, not from AWS's productivity offerings that they have, like an Office-based offering and a directory and a mail and all that kind of stuff offering. I would suspect that most of their revenue is coming from classic AWS hosting, apps, storage, stuff like that, containers. Whereas most of Microsoft's is coming from collaboration, which is, like what you said, is more sticky. The other thing with these numbers that just that really did surprise me was how far behind Google really was in GCP. I'm impressed with their offering, and I knew that they were not at the same level as Amazon and Microsoft, but wow.
Yeah, there's a little bit in here about that sort of telling about why they've reported things this way. A little bit on IBM that kind of makes sense when you think about it. IBM have consultants in basically every large business in the world, right? They are an incumbent service provider in a absolute metric boatload of companies around the world. And so when you think about it like that, it's no surprise that they're hoovering up revenue from those businesses in selling them, and I air quotes again, cloud services, right? So it says here that they've done really well and exploited its power of incumbency in those companies. But they've also, you know, exploiting things like IBM's work with AI, with Watson and tools like that in the cloud, and selling it to those companies as well. And so it's a, you know, billions and billions of dollars business for these guys now, which you don't initially think of IBM like that. But, you know, like we've talked on the show, Oracle are doing a big play for business in the cloud coming up over the next couple of years. And it's not really being talked about all that much, especially in our circles just yet. But I think it's definitely worth watching the space, and maybe IBM are going to be in the same boat.
There's two bits here that definitely they call out with different vendors in this article. One of them, like you just said, with Oracle, about that Larry Ellison believes that Oracle's advanced IaaS technology can snatch huge chunks of share from Amazon. So I'm interested to see how Oracle, being a player in the cloud and people who are still using all the Oracle products, offering those as a service, the same way that, you know, hey, it's a royal pain to manage Oracle apps, just like it's a royal pain to manage Exchange or SharePoint. And look at what Microsoft has done with those. So I'll be curious to see where that goes and how that impacts AWS's bottom line and Azure's bottom line by people who are hosting Oracle on those different clouds. And then the other side that is interesting too is Salesforce. Like this article says, Benioff is hell-bent on getting to $20 billion. That's 2Xing in just a few years. How are they going to do that? And specifically, is it going to be a platform play? We talked about, you know, they're mostly a SaaS offering. So are they going to be in a hosting kind of model? So it'd be curious to watch over the next few years.
It's heating up.
And it definitely is. AC's Voitanos delivers on-demand video-based training for developers on the latest SharePoint extensibility model from Microsoft in his course, Mastering the SharePoint Framework.
CJ's Hyperfish automates the collection of user profile information from users and organizational directories such as Office 365, SharePoint, Active Directory, and HR systems. The secure service supports on-premises, hybrid, and online environments. Bring your directory to life at hyperfish.com.
Are you feeling picky?
I certainly am. We've got some good ones, actually, this week.
I think so.
I think this is going to be funny.
You think we should go with our listener pick first?
Yeah, let's do it.
Go for it.
Okay, so Joe Gasper on Twitter sent us a link. Man, Joe, you know us too well, dude. Like, seriously.
We don't hide it well.
This pick has sort of all of the makings of a perfect pick. Mm-hmm. It's got nerdy space stuff. It's got nerdy developer stuff. And it's got nerdy API stuff. It is a SpaceX PowerShell module. Okay. Slow clap. How cool is this? So apparently SpaceX have some APIs.
No, open source.
Oh, it's an open source API. Interesting.
So SpaceX doesn't have it. There's a REST API that's available from the community, from the subreddit on Reddit, from the subreddit community. Sorry, I need to cut you off like that.
That makes sense though. That's cool.
I use these in my demos.
Oh, nice. Yeah. So they have a REST API that you can as a developer, you can go hit, that's point number one. Mm. There's an API for SpaceX launches. That's cool. The second one is some folks, just to get IT pros in on the mix, have wrapped it with some PowerShell modules or commandlets, I guess, want a better word, or yeah, I guess the commandlets are in the module.
Yeah. Yep.
So you can write your PowerShell. I'm not sure, I haven't think of a really good use for this. Maybe when you're building machines and you're deploying some stuff, you could name your machines after like launches or something, or I don't know, and you use this module to go get that data. It would be pretty sweet. So then you can go start getting the stuff about the various launches and all the data about the launches from within your PowerShell scripts.
It's cool to see the cores and which missions the different cores flew on. Now that we have a company that's shipping or that's doing launches with the same equipment over and over.
Yeah, exactly. And you can get details on upcoming launches, previous launches, all sorts of goodies. Really cool. Oh, launch sites, they've got that. Capsules.
Mm-hmm.
What else is in here? Parts. Good grief. And it's all on GitHub if you want to get in on the action.
Yeah, it's a cool project. I use this in a lot of my demos, SharePoint framework demos. I use the public APIs from the Apollo system from NASA and then the SpaceX ones. But having a PowerShell module is great for IT pros. Do something interesting with PowerShell.
It's funny, the guy who's, or the person, I think it's a person, who's posted it up on GitHub, their GitHub handle is LazyWinAdmin. Which I thought was pretty cool. And it looks like, I thought that was kind of cool too.
Absolutely. I have a pair of picks for us. My first one is called the GRV. It's the Git Repository Viewer. It's a terminal-based interface for viewing all of your Git repositories. So it lets you see references, commits, differences, PRs, a whole bunch of stuff. It's pretty cool. It's great for those people who are not traditional Windows people who like the VI interface because it's got key bindings. But default key bindings are all set up for VIs, for those people who are familiar with VI. So cool little thing, cool little geeky thing that you can use to check out if you have a lot. Like me, I've got one folder called repos off my my profile that's got a ridiculous amount of stuff in there. So this would be useful.
I personally just use the Git desktop app for that, or Git extensions on Windows machine.
Ooh, yeah, I'm a Git command line guy.
Yeah, I can't do it. I'm still in the desktop apps. But Tower is the best Git client that I've seen.
I think
it's for Windows and Mac, but yeah. Oh yeah, SmartGit too is pretty good, yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. You want to go next? You want another one or you want to wait?
I'll purge my pick queue. How's that?
Okay.
It's not spacey. I know I don't have any space picks this week. The other one article by CNET by the section called On Roadshow. It is an all Tesla electric racing series, got a green light. They are starting with race prepped Tesla P100Ds.
Wow.
Yeah. It's not going to be very loud, so you don't need any headgear with this.
And only 5 laps long.
It'd be interesting to see how this works because the FIA has been certified. They got the FIA approval.
Wow.
And it'll be interesting to see how this whole thing plays out and how long the races can actually be with this. I mean, you see, like, we got the Formula E League, which they have, every team has 2 cars, and you get about 30, 40 laps, I think, out of each car. Mm. And then they got to switch cars.
That's a decent amount.
Yeah, it's not bad.
30 laps is decent, yeah.
So, it'd be cool. I'm curious to see this. They got the green light, so it'd be cool to see how it all works out.
I kind of made a Tesla joke when Starman, the live feed was up. Somebody was like, oh, wow, I can't wait to see, you know, footage from when it's out near Mars. And I was like, well... Much like their cars, the battery will only last 12 hours. how many hours can you drive in your Tesla before, say on a dead flat straight road, how many hours do you reckon you could drive in a straight line for?
Reasonable reasonable speed, like going 65 on the highway?
Miles, yeah, 100 kilometers an hour, 60-ish miles an hour. Yeah.
60 miles an hour?
In moderate temperatures, so like 70 degrees, something like that.
6-ish, I think it would be a stretch. Something like that?
I think that's a long way.
I get 240 miles. So I'm trying to think like 65 miles an hour. Actually, it's probably closer 4 or 5. Probably closer 4 or 5. But I mean, that's the reason I was asking you, because someone...
It depends how fast you're going. Yeah.
It depends on how fast you're going, if you have the air conditioning on, all that stuff. So.
And the air temperatures and all that sort of stuff. Yeah. Gotcha. Cool.
How about you?
Okay. I've got a couple non-space related as well. So everybody who's, you know, not a space geek can like, roll your eyes and like, these guys are all they talk about and their picks and space stuff. This week, we've got picks for you. okay, so my first pick is a mega facepalm moment. Listen to this. It's a security advisory arbitrary command execution in the removable device notifier. What this means is on certain Linux systems, when you're using a particular desktop KDE project, you plug a thumb drive in, and you know how you can give thumb drives or disks volume labels? If you put some script in your volume label, when you plug it in, it will execute it. Oh, so you could do like, you could just like nuke the machine by plugging in a thumb drive.
So those are all those movies that say, here's a thumb drive, just go plug it in and it'll do all the rest. And
then yeah. Yeah, it's like if, you know, in like Independence Day when the guy flies up and plugs the thumb drive in and loads the virus or whatever into the alien spacecraft, if they were running KDE, the guy wouldn't have even had to type commands. Like, it would have just been, plug it in, totally movie-like, next minute, alien spacecraft disabled, world saved. All because you can put script in your volume label. How about that?
That's pretty epic.
Oh, boy. So, yeah, Linux is safer by default, huh? Gotcha. In fairness, I'm taking the mickey a little bit out of this because it requires you to be using this particular desktop on Linux and all that sort of stuff. So it's not a Linux kernel issue by any stretch.
Yeah.
But anyway, kind of hilarious if you get my drift. Mm-hmm. My second pick is an article called Kubernetes Monitoring with Prometheus in 15 Minutes. So if you've been listening to us over the last year and you've gotten sick of us talking about containers and Kubernetes, and we've mentioned Prometheus a bunch of times, and you just want to go give it a crack and get up and running, this article steps through super easy way to get up and running with some Prometheus monitoring or Kubernetes monitoring using Prometheus. I haven't done this myself yet, but I've got it bookmarked to go try it out. And it sort of talks through all the concepts, how it works, what you need to do it yourself, and then steps you through all the steps. And you've got to have reasonable understanding of a few concepts, but I wouldn't exactly call it a 100 level. You've got to use the command line, for example, so that is no longer 100 level in my book. But yeah, gives you a good shot at getting up and running with some of the basic tools and the kinds of things you need to know in about 15 minutes or maybe a couple of hours for me.
That's cool. This is one that I've wanted to try out Prometheus. You hear such good things about it. I know we talked about it here and there on the show
A couple
of times, but it is like the monitoring, the logging, the visualization of like what's going on in your environment.
It's kind of nice. They talk about Prometheus for doing all of that. Then they talk about Grafana for helping to, you know, build dashboards and show the data flowing in and charts and all that sort of stuff. And then Alert Manager for telling you when things are going sideways.
Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah, kind of an interesting thing if you're looking to try it out.
Cool pick, man. Awesome. That wraps us up on another show, man.
Yeah, a couple of weeks we will see each other in Branson. I'm looking forward to that.
We will.
We'll be live from Branson, Missouri.
Absolutely, yeah. And if you guys, if listeners, if you have any specific questions that you want to ask, any funny stories or stuff like that, please chime in. Send us some stories through our website, send them to us through Twitter, through Facebook. Any questions that you want us to approach or to address on the show, now's the time to send them in because we're doing all the planning on what we're going to do for that live show right about now.
Exactly. Yeah, definitely get in touch. We'd love to hear from you and get some folks participating in the show.
Absolutely. MicrosoftCloudShow.com, at MS Cloud Show on Twitter, Microsoft Cloud Show on Facebook. And we're also on email, info@MicrosoftCloudShow.com.
Sweet.
Thanks again, everybody, and we will see you next week.
Cheers.
Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop a 5-star review in iTunes. Word of mouth recommendations are the most effective ways for us to grow the show, and we'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or an MP3, and provide a link so that we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is brought to you by Keith Ritchie. For more information on Keith's music, head to music.kritchie.com. You can subscribe to us in iTunes and the Google Play Store by searching for the Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook, searching for Microsoft Cloud Show, or on Twitter, at MS Cloud Show. And finally, sign up to our mailing list by heading over to our website and entering your email to interact with us, participate in upcoming interviews, and other cool stuff. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.